So we ended last time on this discussion of this concept of nous. So it's higher intelligence, it's refined intelligence. It's, you know, something very sharp and very, you know, particular. You know, it's not so much cleverness, it's just very smart, right? So they sense that there must be something smart that's put everything together because it all seems to work, right?
So then that element is appreciated
by these Greek philosophers, and they're also able to appreciate that anything mundane can't really express it, which we also agree with. But then, because they're not in parampara, they come to the conclusion that therefore even trying to express it is nonsense. Right? But interestingly enough, one wouldn't be able to perfect one's work to the standard of this supreme intelligence either. But work goes on. Right? The intellect, the mind is short of the supreme intelligence, but they don't mind using it and contemplating. You understand? In other words, he had issues with poets. That's all. Does that make some sense? So because of parampara, then they know is that the point is we will say exactly the same thing. But the difference is these words that aren't quite enough, when they're empowered with the chit potency, because they're coming in parampara, the transcendental effect of describing the Lord is there. Right? Because the point is effect, not fact. Does that make sense? That's what you're trying to do. Fact, he's God. Okay, but what's the effect of that? We know he's God. Good. Nice. But what are you going to do about it? Does that make sense? So that's the whole aspect. So these scholars then, even though they're super intelligent, they're, because they're not connected with the parampara, then they can't really connect with the, you know, supreme super intelligence. Does this make sense? This is why it's so important that the perspectives that we use are coming down in parampara, because otherwise our perspectives will be faulty. They must be, right? You can basically have 8,400,000 different perspectives. That's kind of a limit. It's big. It's a lot. But if you don't, but all of them are mundane. So unless you take the perspective of the acharyas, then your perspective will be mundane. Does that make sense? It's a very simple formula. Painful formula, in that the ego may not appreciate that because I grew up in the particular situation I grew up in, I have a particular samskaras because of that, and therefore my natural, uncontemplated view of the world that springs from that, to me is natural. You know what I'm saying? I grew up, let's say, in a family that has no worries for money. So therefore, why should anybody worry about money? And people worry about money, what's the trip? Or I grew up in a family that counted every penny. So therefore, I'm always very conscious not to spend. In other words, what's his trip? Why can't he just relax? You understand? So these are all mundane. So much of our gut reactions to practically everything we do is based on that, our previous samskara. So we always have to be very, very careful that that is kept properly guided by the position of the acharyas. Does this make sense? Otherwise, our viewpoint will be mundane. Right? Whenever we talk about issues, you know, general issues in society, basically they're all mundane. If you think about it, they're not spiritual at all. They can be engaged in the spiritual, that's why they're around. But they themselves, in particular, are not. So unless they're touched by the chit potency, they remain mundane. Right? So, not being connected with the parampara, then these Greek scholars did not understand this. Therefore, then, they've dropped out a very important part of society, right? They're talking about society. Society means interaction of people. Refined interaction means that it's going to be poetic, it's going to be nice, it's going to be refined. Right? So, therefore, it's not functioning. Right? We don't see the Greek society anymore as it was. Right? Does that make sense? They're not known as philosophers these days. When you think of Greeks, no one thinks of philosophers. People that are into parties, yes, but philosophy, no. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Okay, then continuing with the page, the Parishishtam, the appendix. The verse, Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, "My dear King, your question is glorious because it is very beneficial to all kinds of people. The answer to this question is the prime subject matter for hearing, and it is approved by all transcendentalists." Sandarbha 3. In this word verse, the word te means by you, and the phrase pumsam shrotav yadishu means among the varieties of subject matters sought to be heard in the human society. We may note in this connection that Maharaj Parikshit asked this specific question because he was eager to hear about Lord Krishna, and he wanted to elicit a reply containing descriptions of Lord Krishna. Maharaj Parikshit's question is glorious because it asks about the original personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, and his many incarnations, and also because it is a lokahitam, or beneficial for all kinds of people. Because in asking this question, Maharaj Parikshit was motivated by pure unalloyed love for Krishna. He became perfectly successful in attaining the actual goal of human life. This is described in the following words, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.1. Suta Goswami said, "Maharaj Parikshit, the son of Uttara, after hearing the speeches of Sukadev Goswami, which were all about the truth of the self, applied his concentration faithfully upon Lord Krishna." The words Matim Satim in this verse indicate the purity of Maharaj Parikshit. The purity was manifest in the next quotation, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.8.2. Narrations concerning the Lord who possesses wonderful potencies are certainly auspicious for living beings in all planets. O greatly fortunate Sukadeva Goswami, please continue narrating Srimad Bhagavatam so that I can place my mind upon the Supreme Soul, Lord Krishna, and being completely freed from material qualities, thus relinquish this body. Jiva Goswami takes up verses 2, 5, and 39 in Bhakti Sandarbha. Consult Srila Prabhupada's purports to the same verses. Okay, so here, this element is that being, we saw before, is that when the material attachment is reduced, then the desire to hear and chant about Krishna is increased. So here he's pointed out this element of Matim Satim, that Maharaj Parikshit is pure. Therefore, his discussions with Sukadeva Goswami, he's trying to elicit that element of discussions about Krishna, because that's what he wants to hear. So he's making it what is beneficial for everybody, all time, all place. The only thing that's like that is Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? Like if I say, can you bring me something? Yeah, you know, something, you know, anything. You know, let's say from the kitchen and on the counter and on the right side of the counter and in the little jar. Yeah, like that. So what am I going to get? Anything from the house or specifically what I wanted? Right? So in this way, as soon as you say beneficial for everybody at all time, all places, and especially for one who's about to die, then what does that leave? Anything else? No, it only leaves Krishna. So, therefore, because of his purity, this was his inspiration. So, for ourselves, our endeavor for purity is not because purity itself is something special, right? Because purity itself, as we said before, according to the element of the parampara, then is varied. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, where were we? Just lost that thread.
Don't you hate that when it happens?
Yeah, yeah. You get all the time. Yeah, you get going and it just kind of like dissolves. And just, where did it go? Yeah, that's the problem with tangents. Well, this is one thing to prove how Vyasadeva is the most perfect writer and these great sages, is because what they're doing, there's a very simple, straightforward theme in every work that they write. But because there are so many things to establish, what they do is they don't use the Western method, okay, I do all this kind of thing, and then do all this kind of thing, and then all these little boxes. They describe all the details as they come up. It's actually, it's very efficient, but extremely foreign to our method. So as you describe it, then a point comes up that's being made, but it'll have its doubts, it'll have everything, so therefore there'll be also a point made to establish that, and then examples. And within that, because every major point has sub-points, and those points have sub-points, then it gets off into more and more stories. Where sometimes you see 6-7 themes working at once, right? When you were doing all the storylines, there were like 6-7 working, right, in the Bhagavatam? Yeah, of the conversation. Yeah. Yeah, like 6-7 levels of conversation going on so many of the time. Now and again you come back up, and very rarely come back up, Vyasadeva says. So you get that, I think, in the first canto, you get it a few places. So you're coming up to him speaking. Then it goes down, you have Sutta Goswami speaking in Shonaka. Then you have Parikit Maharaj and Sukadeva Goswami. Then below that, then you have, let's say, Maitreya and speaking. And then he's telling a story of someone else who's telling a story of something like this. So you get 6-7. This is expert that you could do that and then so pleasantly just bring it all, fold it all back and come back up to the point where you were and then again go off. So I'm saying that's expert. So what we're pointing out here is sometimes we don't always do that in the process. We lose the thought. It's like you're making the great point and then it's like, okay, you made that point. Where were we? Yeah. So, basically is that, that was the point, is that our aim for purity is Krishna's the supreme pure, therefore that's the commonality. Friendship means that you have something in common. So how you'll be friendly with Krishna if you're not pure like he's pure? Right? At least something. He's supreme, we're small, but at least it's a common quality. Right? You can take a drop of ocean water and put it in the ocean, it goes fine. You take a drop of water and put it into a vat of oil, it doesn't mix because it's not in common. They're both liquids, you could say, but the common quality here is the water. Right? Does that make sense? So the purity has that because of that, but the definition of pure is actually Krishna's definition. Definite pure actually means what's connected to him. Otherwise, why is he off dancing with other people's wives? He sleeps in the morning. You know, he gets up, goes out all night. You know, so you could say, I've even heard it. I've heard Hindus say, the husband is a devotee, you know, ISKCON devotee. The wife absolutely refuses to be an ISKCON devotee. She's a very devout, religious woman, very traditional, and totally into Ram.
You know, there's a saying in India, worship Krishna, behave like Ram.
Yeah. So her thing is this, he says, why don't you like Krishna? She says, I can never worship that person. She says, everything he does is immoral. She says, but Ram, that, everything he does is perfect. She says, that's God. You know? So my point is therefore the morality is subjective to Krishna's opinion. Does that make sense? Because morality is there simply to enhance. It means you can't have Parakiya Ras unless it's wrong to be off with someone else's wife. Does that make sense? You know what I'm saying? Freshness is there when possession is desired but not obtained.
Good point.
You understand? As soon as possession is complete, freshness is gone. You have to invent freshness. Because it's yours. So therefore, the closeness and intimacy of it, it must act the way you want it to, without any discussion. So the element of a relationship actually becomes tightened. Right? But that's the way it works here, because we're trying to tighten that to go back to Godhead, because that's where our intention is supposed to be. So if our mind is distracted by immoral activities, right, because of the sense gratification and the control and all these things, definitely very hard to think of Krishna. Right? But if you restrict and regulate the material life, then it becomes nice, it becomes pleasant, it also becomes less attractive. Does that make sense? Therefore, then, what are you supposed to do with that? That attraction is supposed to go to Krishna. So if you're cultivating, in other words, here's the point. If you're cultivating purity so that, therefore, you can be more absorbed in Krishna and less distracted by Maya, it will work. If you're cultivating purity just because you think purity is great and you're better than everybody else, or even if you don't think you're better than that, just that purity itself is so important, you'll become pure. But it doesn't necessarily mean you'll become attracted to Krishna on your own. Others may come along and influence in their association, just like the four Kumaras. They were pure. They weren't endeavoring. But they came in touch. They were elevated. Sukadeva is also pure. He's not bothering. I'm here. Life's okay. But he became attracted. You know what I'm saying? So it's not a loss. But what we're pointing out is that purity for purity's sake, on the devotional on the pious platform, you can't get much better than that. But on the devotional platform, it's only a tool. Yes?
Let's see if we look at the example of the washerman in Mathura compared to the Brahmin's wives.
True purity
only comes through Shravana Kirtana. What you're saying about purity is you
attract the Krishna, because the washerman, you know, he went through so many verses of austerity and so many things, but the Krishna can't be found in any other time. Yeah. Yeah. So their religiousness then worked for them. In other words, the mode of goodness is the best platform to get from there to transcendence. It's really rough on the psyche of the living entity to go from pure goodness, ignorance. Pure goodness, ignorance. It's rough. Therefore, it's recommended goodness, pure goodness. Goodness, pure goodness. Like, I think it was one time, Bhakti Chumar had only been in the movement about a year or something, you know? But he was already moving as Prabhupada's servant to cook like this. Prabhupada wanted to give him sannyas. Then all the other senior swamis came, and, well, don't you think it's early? Because he was very young. You know, he's very soft, and, you know, he didn't cut the, you know, tough, mean, dynamic swami profile.
Where are they now?
Yeah, that's another point. Yeah, well, that was Prabhupada's point. So then they said, you know, we don't know, you know, he's like that, he's so, you know, it's like the, what is it, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was worried about Lord Chaitanya. He was so beautiful and young. He says, this may be dangerous to be a sannyasi. So then they came to Prabhupada and said, you know, says, I'm not sure, you know, you think that we're not rushing into this, you know, like that, what if he, you know, he may fall down, he's so young, and like this and that. Prabhupada said, yes, if he falls down, he'll fall down to the mode of goodness. Yes, you have a point there, you know, and then they all kind of like, you know, put their tails between their legs and kind of like leave the room. So that's the point, is from the mode of goodness, it's very easy, because everything works in the mode of goodness. There's a pain there because material life is painful. But it's a subtle pain. It's not raucous like the mode of passion or ignorance. You see? And it's illuminating that pain. The pain and passion, you simply are angry at others, or you want...
That's raucous.
Yeah, you want a solution.
The mode of ignorance is just dull pain.
dull.
You feel it,
but it's very intense. It's like it invokes death of yourself. The other one invokes death of everybody else.
It's so painful, you don't even want to do anything about it.
Yeah.
Too much.
Yeah, it just creates. So it's, does that make sense? Like that. But the mode of goodness, the pain invokes enlightenment. Mm-hmm. Like that.
Yeah, there's a statement in the, this is from the Bible, but I think very true, that he whom God loveth most chastiseth most. Him whom God loveth most chastiseth most.
He mentions that. I think Bali Maharaj, that's that whole pastime.
Yeah.
Then Vamanadeva is just done this whole number on Bali Maharaj. He's got him tied up, you know, in front of everybody. His wife and kids are there. All the other great personalities are there. Completely humiliated him. And then complaints are going on. Serious complaints are going on about the behavior. And then Vamanadeva, then he speaks. And he asked Bali Maharaj to, I think, explain the situation. And Bali Maharaj explains that if the Lord really has affection, then he takes away the material attachment. He takes it away. That's a sign of his affection. We generally approach God, you know, our tarti is that we have a problem, we want God to solve it. So, but the thing is he takes away the anartas, but it's invigorating in that it's a release from, it's like if you have a problem and you have, you know, a big weight on the chest, you take it off, it feels better. So we don't know what the problem is. We think solving means adjusting this attachment so the attachment works more smoothly is the problem. No, the attachment itself is the problem.
Yeah. If I can just cut in, I talk with the devotee, good friend of mine, 2 days ago, and when you're close to someone, you talk about things like this, but as you've experienced them, share. And so we were talking about how your mind becomes overwhelmed, you know, with worries, anxieties, shame, guilt, all that stuff. And starts spinning around, faster, becoming more and more anxiety. And then, you take shelter of Krishna, you chant, and then you get this realization, this whirlpool is there, but there's nothing at the center of it. You're actually, the soul is not there. It just is what you think you are. Mm-hmm. But that's just Maya. The soul is not even... it's not the center of this whirlpool of problems, and then you feel such relief because you understand the soul's actually with Krishna and completely secure and never touched by any of these things. So the thing is, as Prabhupada and Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses that also the term the whirlpool of material energy flowing us down, but it's only because we identify with material energy to begin with that it can have that effect on us. We're actually never really at the center of
anything.
Distress, lust, agitation, all of that.
Catching the drift here is means it goes back to everything we've been building on, because this whole thing is on the Virat Rupa, a very major element in this canto, is that the Virat Rupa and everything that we would take of value is only used as something to, as a mark against the actual position or standard. Right? The example being given, I think Vishwanath gives it, is that you don't know what the moon is. So someone points off, see over there in the distance, see that house, and next to that there's a tree. Yeah, and then the tree, you look to the left, there's a branch sticking way out. Yeah? Okay, and then above that you see that round kind of white thing there? That's the moon. So the Virat Rup and all these different elements of sadhana that the Vedic literature gives are like those tree. It's simply ways to point out that Krishna is the supreme pure. You should be pure, right? Krishna is, I mean, what centers around Krishna is perfect, because he's all perfect, so everything about him is perfect, so you center your life around him, everything will be perfect, right? So these are all, always remember Krishna. Never forget Krishna. That's the other part where you technically avoid activities that will distract your mind from Krishna, right? So therefore, all kinds of irreligious, immoral activities will do that. Does that make sense? That's why they're wrong. Because otherwise, it's an illusion anyway, so it doesn't, it's not real. You know, it's just social convention. You say, this is husband, this is wife, this is children. Everybody accepts it, everybody agrees with it. But it's a bunch of chemicals that you somehow or another separated. You know, I take, okay, here's the husband, here's the wife, you know, they have so nice, cute little children, they're so cute, you know. Yeah. You're thinking, this guy's crazy or what? So that's all it is the soul identifies, and this soul thinks, yes, I am that cute little girl stone, and I'm this cute little, you know, cool little boy stone, and yes, I'm the, you know, very together father stone here, and I'm the really, you know, attractive, smooth, and very white, you know, female stone here. So that's what's going on. Does that make sense? So because that's what we're dealing with, we work with it. It's not a problem. We don't have it because it's Krishna's illusion anyway, so it's still connected. But that it itself takes on the mood that develops issues and crusades and stuff like that, that are not based on the acharyas, is actually mundane. It gets you going, it makes you feel good, because it's religious, or generally these days it's just moral, or justice, or that it's pranamoy. We feel very good and have a purpose to our life. But if you look in history, many persons who have had these purposes, once they've fulfilled that crusade, where are they? There's a Bengali saying, if you're in a chair in a room, and someone else is in a chair in the same room, and you want to get them out of their chair and out of the room, you can do that, but you have to get out of your chair to do it. Right? That's a Bengali saying. I don't know the Bengali for that one. It's pretty lengthy. Does that make sense? So that's why it's very important that we don't judge our spiritual life by that we're better than others, or just that it's based on this. This is a sign when knowledge and detachment are there, that I'm not so inclined towards material activities I was before. That's a good sign. It means the devotional process is working. But it itself, you don't take, this is good. It's good simply because it's a symptom of, how you say, developing devotional character. Does that make sense? So that was what we were meaning here, is that the purity that's talking about here, when it says you must be pure, and that purity will cause the chanting, means that purity which is being endeavored for because you want to obtain Krishna. Otherwise, just endeavoring for purity to become pure, we never hear about smartas or others wanting, they're quite very pure. Right? Devotees were commenting about, you know, these Brahmins, and like that, probably just stopped them and says, these guys are Brahmins. They may not be devotees, but they are Brahmins. So you just, you know, it's not your league. You're Malechas Yavanas, you stay out of that. Don't go there. You know, it's not your right to walk down that street. You know. Does that make sense? So that's why it's not just, you don't want to mistake it that it's only morality, or only religiousness, or only moksha, like this. But the purity is that it's being done to please Krishna, as an endeavor for Krishna. Then the more pure, the more space you have in your consciousness to be absorbed in Krishna. You're not distracted. So therefore, as the never forget Krishna becomes, you know, increased, it means always remember Krishna becomes increased. Right? If you're forgetting Krishna, you won't remember Krishna. But if you get rid of the things that make you don't forget Krishna, then you're remembering Krishna.
A little story, just to illustrate this. Satsarupa Maharaj, remember there was a time when Prabhupada used to take from the GBC every month?
Yeah, somebody to be the secretary.
He wanted to uplift the GBC. Every month, a new GBC man would come and be Prabhupada's personal servant. So when Satsarupa Maharaj, when it was his turn, so he was cooking. He had to do all menial service. So he was cooking for Prabhupada. This was in Calcutta. And Satsarupa Maharaj had never been, maybe had been to the temple, but never been in the kitchen. And, that's the original Albert Road. So I'm sure you still remember the kitchen. I still remember.
I spent a year and a half in that kitchen.
So he was in there trying to cook for Prabhupada, and there was all this stuff, other stuff going on. So he made some comment to Prabhupada to the effect that it was almost, on some level it was almost like accusative, that. So I'm not necessarily saying that this is literally what he said, but this is how Prabhupada took it.
Mm-hmm.
That you've always told us how superior Indian civilization is to the West, Indian culture is to the West, and Indians are very clean. But if I look at that kitchen, I look at what's going on in there, I'm just shocked. And another implication in the statement is, how can I cook for you? I'm supposed to do this service for you, my spiritual master, under these circumstances. How is it possible that I could actually make a nice offering for you in those conditions? And Satsarupa Maharaj remembers that, Prabhupada just got that look. like Yamraj looking at a sinful and Prabhupada's reply is, you simply attend to your business, don't be concerned with these other things. You, in other words, if you focus on your service of cooking for me, then all these other things are going to be, Krishna will sort that out. But what you do for me, if it is in that purpose is there, then it will be devotional service. Everything will be fine. I'll accept it. But if you come to me bringing up all these so-called material excuses why you can't do your service for me, then this is just bogus. What Prabhupada was making very clear, all it means is you just don't want to do service.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, I'm not saying that all this was literally spoken, but
mm-hmm.
afterwards, when Satsang Maharaj talked about it, that's the way he talked about it. Uh-huh. That was a lesson he got out of it.
Uh-huh.
That's just what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that clear? It's just because it's being brought up quite a few times, this point. So you can see it's a major point being given to us by the Bhagavatam itself and the Acharyas here, Jiva Goswami. Like that, so we'll just bring that up. We can go through the philosophy.
Yeah, and go back to the.
Okay. Yeah, we were just for the time.
So, first thing I wanted to do, because we came to the conclusion that this mundus and intelligibilis, which is a Latin term from Western philosophy. That the world is formed of intelligence. That's the ultimate principle behind everything. And therefore can only be understood by an intellectual. Your typical conception of a philosopher. And this is all going back to Plato, and it's ultimately impersonal. But the actual principle behind intelligence is Pradyumna. And his Kalyana Gunas, particular Kalyana Gunas or auspicious qualities, this is Panchratra. This is a bit different from we've learned from Prabhupada about the Sadashwaras, the six opulences. So this is a bit different, but as I mentioned yesterday, it's even there by Vishwanath, just mentioned by Vishwanath Chakravarti and our Sri Guru Vasudeva, the Kalyani Guna. So we are actually played to the spiritual master. But if we were to, as I often say, if I were to ask, anyone knows what the Kalyani Guna. Oh, hey, are you running away?
No.
No. I have these books. I want. Don't go away without getting your books back. I was looking for you, didn't see you. Okay, anyway. So it's nice to know what these Kalyana Gunas are. So, all six are within Vasudeva, the first of the Vihas, and then the other three, who are, Pradyumna means he manifests in the creation wheel as Garbhodakasha Vishnu. And I would actually welcome, I'm going to say it, but if you want to expand,
on
please jump
form.
In. But
okay.
he is. You'll find several places in Srila Prabhupada's books that he is the Dira Lalita feature. Yeah. And Prabhupada says, sometimes it is said that Cupid, Kamadeva, is the perfect example, but Pradyumna is actually the origin. Actually, in Krishna's pastimes,
he appears to be an incarnation
of Kamadeva, although Kamadeva is...
Well, there's the higher Kamadeva and the lower.
Yeah.
There's the Lord as Kamadeva, then there's his... That comes out, I think, in Rupa Goswami mentions... is it Rupa? One of the stories, the interactions that... I think it's in the Dana Keli, when Krishna's saying that I've been sent by this, you know, King Cupid, because it's his place here, the forest, to collect all your girls and take back to his court, you know, for judgment and punishment, you know. And so then they make some goofy comments on this. The girls make goofy comments on this Kamadev. So then Madhu Mangal gets all, you know, upset. And then he talks about how Krishna, he is the supreme Kamadev. And this other Kamadev is, you know, millions of them cannot compare to the supreme Kamadev. Yeah. So he just, it comes out as that. So there's the Lord as Kamadev, and that's Madan Mohan. And then there's the that potency that's given to the, how you say? That living entity that takes up those activities.
And Pradyumna is Shvamsha expansion. So he's Vishnu Tattva. So he's, you know, it's one and different from Krishna, but he's not the Purna Bhagavan. But that quality of Cupid that Krishna has, he has. He's endowed with that. So it's interesting. It's interesting. You learn a great lesson here, because in the material world, for us jivas, I mean, you have buddhi and you have kam, and it's like one or the other. You know. That's why Arjuna asks, "Why is it that even a man of intelligence can be overwhelmed by lust?" Because they're antagonistic. And a man, if he wants to preserve his buddhi, his intellect, then he has to control his senses and his mind. And that's what I'm getting. The philosophers, this type of intellectual, they actually don't know what to do with the mind and senses. It's just something to be, you know, get it out of the way. And then they think when they, because as Plato said, we have within us this noose. That I think I might have mentioned that before. It's actually very good logic. These Greeks, they were very good logicians, famous for that. And he said, in this body, there is earth. In this world, there is so much earth. He went through the elements like that. In this body, there's water. In this universe, there's so much unlimited water. And then he goes higher, and then he comes to intelligence. Or mind. And And then he says, but the atheists, you know, this is where they stop. Everything makes sense, but when you come to consciousness or mind or intellect, they say, yes, it is here, but it is not out there. And this, he says, this makes no sense.
Yes, Plato.
This is Plato. You know, so this, he said, this is an illogical statement. So, in Platonic philosophy, the idea is that there is a perfect form of things. It's actually, in terms of our philosophy, as I said, yesterday, I'm going to explain these things in such a way to help us think and understand the application of this Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy in our world. You know, this is not just abstract theory, but there actually is an application, because the Western world, I think I've already mentioned in previous class, a famous British philosopher who was a contemporary of that, Bertrand Russell, they were in a kind of philosophical club together, Ludwig Wittgenstein. You may have never heard of these names before, but these are really some of the top brains of recent times. And they were all sort of in a little club that used to meet and talk about issues. So it was Ian Whitehead, I think he was at Oxford or Cambridge, one of those two. And he made this very prescient, means very far-seeing remark that all of Western philosophy, the whole history of it, is simply footnotes to Plato. So in other words, if you can understand what Plato is saying, and the rest it's just like dominoes, you know, it just falls into place. The philosophical discourse has never gone beyond that. Plato laid everything down. And Plato is actually very good. I mean, for being a yavana, he was pretty good, because he accepted reincarnation, the eternality of the soul. And he did have some idea of a god too, but it was this god of intelligence. And because, you know, the poets in ancient Greece were guys, you know, kind of poet who, we still have them around today, you know, who need a good long drink. You know, in those days it was kept in what's called amphora. We have an amphora upstairs, you know, a round jug with the narrow. We keep water in it, reassuring everyone, but in ancient Greece, those Mediterranean countries, they might also keep water, but they kept other liquid substances that would inspire them to poetry. In other words, they were drunkards. So, in Plato's vision of a perfect society, which he presented in his book, The Republic, there's just no place for poets. He just ruled the whole thing out, because he considered poetry to be anti-intellectual. And it's just word juggling. It's just, you know, using words to create beautiful images that are just about this world. So in this we see that actually Plato, I've seen in Prabhupada's discussions about Plato, Prabhupada himself came to this conclusion, because some people try to argue that actually he was a kind of personalist, because he did talk about truth and beauty. But Prabhupada, in hearing the devotees talk about what Plato said, he would kind of shake his head and say, no, there is speculation there. And then, as soon as there's speculation, that means Prabhupada would follow this sort of, I'm actually using terms Prabhupada would use, no clear idea. And then no clear idea means impersonalism, you see. It's like, there might be something there, but this is again like Mara saying about the universal form. You know, an impersonalist who thinks, yes, God has a personal aspect, it's the Virat Rupa, and I meditate upon that. But the Virat Rupa is material. So he's not really a person. So similarly, you know, Plato might have had some idea of ultimate truth and beauty, but it was out of focus. It was not properly focused. Yes, Manju.
Marjas, I don't know whether I'm right or not, but my understanding is that Pujumna is not only providing beauty for the intelligent, but also for the senses. So if Plato doesn't accept that, and the senses are the medium through which we express, have a relationship, then obviously it's not
personal. Yeah, well, actually it is Lord Sankarshan, who is the lord of the senses and their objects, but Plato being the lord of buddhi, that's how you use your senses, you see. Mm. Unless you have intelligence, you can't use your senses. You
but it's also in here, it's the sense, it means in the four kinds of ego, then one of them is they're all centered around you have the consciousness and the mind, then the intelligence, and that makes the senses, and then the false ego, and that makes the five objects. So the sense being as an entity, then you could say it's Sankarshan, because it is a Sankarshan will be the placement or the relationship between the objects.
Yeah.
Like that. So that element, you would say it's Sankarshan. He's like a hand. You would say my hand and this jug. So that Sankarshan is the hand has to hold the handle of the jug, and then it will work. But it's a sense that it can perceive things and do that, and that there's the desire to do that. That's Prajumna.
Yeah. Actually, Sankarshan being, Mahavishnu being his expansion, and therefore being Mahavishnu, Sankarshan, they're addressed in the Bhagavatam as Tamasi. So it means, you see, that unconscious state or sleeping state means the senses are there, but they're not active.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so the senses are there. They're already there with Mahavishnu, but they're not engaged. And when intelligence steps in, then those senses which were there,
mm-hmm.
then they're mm-hmm. engaged. And
mm-hmm.
Pradyumna is he's also the Rishikesh, he's the master of the senses. He's not only the perfect representative of Kamadev, but he's also the perfect representative of control of the senses too, because Brahma is his direct son. You know, the Christians talk about son of God, so we also have our son of God,
yeah.
You know, and that is Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma, that's you'll see later in the second canto, that is the Lord's praise. That's why the Lord says, I'm giving this knowledge to you, because you're not a bogus yogi. You have really controlled your senses. I know, you know, because I'm in your heart. I'm the Lord of everyone's senses, and I know that your meditation, your sense control is perfect. So therefore, you are deserving of this Vedic knowledge. I give it to you. So, that's why Prabhupada says the most qualified jiva. And sometimes there is no qualified jiva in the whole universe, so then the Lord himself has to take the post. So by this principle of intelligence, which is actually rajasic in the material world, the mind, that's interesting, the mind, intelligence is higher than the mind in one sense, but the mind is in the mode of goodness, because the intelligence is giving the impetus for action. And I remember hearing from Brahmananda, because Brahmananda was a Brahman Prabhu, he told me that before he was a devotee, he went through 5 years of psychoanalysis, which in those days meant Freud, always meant Freudian psychoanalysis. So he used to ask Srila Prabhupada a lot of questions along these lines. And he was surprised to hear Prabhupada say, yes, Freud was right on one thing, that the motivating principle, in other words, what is it that is energizing the intelligence? You know, just like the other day, yesterday I was talking with Jai Gaudiya Maharaj, and I different times we've come to this point, how actually cats are much more intelligent than dogs. But the thing is that cats are not so easily motivated to show their intelligence. If you know, a cat is laying there and you take a little bouncy ball and, fetch, the cat will just look at you like, "Screw you, man. Why do I gotta go get that thing?" But I read a recent story, this was recently in the news, how a cat was, they go on their patrols, And so a cat found a bird with a broken wing that had fallen out of its nest. And, so for your average cat, that's dinner, But this cat picked up that bird by the scruff of his neck like a kitten and brought it home. And, was meowing, and then the owners came, and the cat was licking the bird and looking very plaintively. "You must take care of this big bird. The wing is broken." And so the people they took the bird in. And the bird could not fly again, but they could have got it back in shape where it could hop around. And then this cat and the bird became inseparable. They're best friends. And the cat taught the bird to like cat food. In other words, meat. And so they were eating off the same plate. They'd sleep together. And the whole reason was that the bird became the cat's, secret agent. He'd go out and hop around, and other birds would come. And the cat would be nearby in the grass. And jump out and steal the other birds, eat them. And then him and his friend, they'd go back home. And you'll be sure, if you know about Panchatantra, that there's obviously some unwritten thing there between the cat and the bird that the bird knows that if I don't do this, then I'm next on the menu. In the material world, there's no pure motivation. But anyways, it shows how intelligent cats are. Cats are really intelligent creatures, but only when they see it's in their interest. Otherwise, they just lay around and look at you with those big eyes, But anyway. So, that's intelligence. It has to be motivated by something. So, Krishna consciousness actually means, in Buddha Yoga, Bhagavad Gita or Prabhupada actually says in renunciation through wisdom that Bhakti Yoga is the perfection of Buddha Yoga. I remember Vishnu Jana Maharaj, he used to put it this way: first we have to satisfy our intelligence completely, then we can become pure devotees. When there's no more doubts, this is nishta, when there's no more doubts, there's no more questions, there's no more misgivings, there's no more hesitation, that's the point that Krishna wants to bring Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. No more hesitation. No more, reflecting on what I'm saying. Because you see through the Gita, he's got so many questions, to clarify. But finally at the end, this is just after when the Mahabharata narrative resumes after the Gita. The first thing Arjuna says, "Achyuta, drive my chariot." So Achyuta means unconquerable one, same as Ajit, unconquerable one, you drive my chariot, now I'm ready, And of course later on, when it came to killing Karna, again the same thing came up. Krishna said, "If you don't do it, I'll do it," And then Arjuna said, "Alright, you're the master, I'm the servant, I should do it." But he had to get it. So Vishnu Janamaraj used to say like that, we have to, he used to stress the importance of reading Prabhupada's books. And, I was trained of all, I always say, of all God brothers I have ever known, Vishnu Jana Maharaj is the one who trained me the most. So, very, very sacred person. And that's why I stress this so much in this class. You have to understand Prabhupada's books if you really want to get anywhere in spiritual life. because you have to remove all. He used to also talk about. He was very expert. You know, he used to give very. He explained things in a way that you could really understand. He once said that ignorance, the soul is like the sun. Krishna gives that example in the 13th chapter, and he said, ignorance, our doubts are like sunspots. You know, they're spots of darkness even on the surface of the sun. You know, so the full Krishna in Gita, 3rd chapter, calls the soul jnani, knower. All this knowledge is there. What is that term? Bhaktivinoda Thakur says svasiddha jnana. Svasiddha jnana. When the soul is in its perfectional position, siddha, then svasiddha jnana, that knowledge is his. All Vedic knowledge is already there in all of us. But we have to go through this, you know, all we're doing. That's why. What's the first service you get? Scrubbing pots. Because Prabhupada used to say it's cleaning the heart. You have to remove the sunspots on the heart. We have to start off. You know, we were talking just yesterday how hava, which we take to mean fire sacrifice, but early in the Rig Veda, it is a term for knowledge, for wisdom. Mm. That was in Rig Veda. That's in. Satyuga. Then in Dwapara Yuga, it became ritual. A ritual required to scrub the heart clean so that you could get the hava as knowledge or vidya. But in Satyuga, there was actually no need to perform. Everything was done internally. There was no need to perform external sacrifice. Some were doing, of course, but there was really no need. It was all internal. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're just approaching 9 o'clock. There was one last thing I wanted to say, because I was saying how Pradumna is, you know, one of his, Kalyanaguna is, well, this is why he's the perfect Cupid, because Virya and Aishwarya, I mean, that's the way you get the girls, you know. The man is, you know, virile, we have this word, very virile. And he's got a lot of, you know, dough in his pocket, you know, Aishwarya. You know, he's gonna, you know, there's that old song, Mack the Knife. Yeah. The last line of it, it was actually written by Bertolt Brecht, a German, but then translated into English. And Louis Armstrong did the most famous rendition of it. And he's describing Mack the Knife. He's a killer. But he's rich and he's good looking. So then the last line of it, you know, there's this low class character, but he starts naming off a list of women's names, you know, Lotta Lenya and Susie Tawdry and Sweet Lucy Brown, a list of names. And he says, the line forms on the left, on the right. I should have said left, but I think he says on the, you know, in other words, the line forms on the right, girls. Mackie's back in town. The man with the beard and Aishwarya. Get in line. So women are naturally attractive to that. But this doesn't mean that a woman cannot be, because we're all spirit soul, cannot be endowed with this quality of intelligence. So I just wanted to end the class by bringing along a couple of books. I do a lot of reading of different books. The whole idea, Prabhupada said we should get different angles of vision of his books. So that's why I read a lot of books. The whole point is to bring back these issues. Because it's like perfect questions, perfect answers. That book is very interesting, that the one asking the question is from the West. Because in India... That's why Prabhupada went to the West, because in India at his time, the Indian people, although they are the most intelligent people in the class, in the class, in the world, they are actually the most, because this is the Punya Bhumi, they were not using their intelligence in the wrong way. And many of our Western ISKCON devotees, I've heard the Indians that they've met to preach to, admit to them, I know nothing about this. You know, they might be big scientists or whatever, but the intelligence has become misplaced. So Prabhupada went to the West, he said, to again create the head of society, Brahmanas, because the Indians stopped asking questions about their own literature. You know, yes, I have read Bhagavad Gita. You know, they read it once, and I think it's just not important to them. So intelligence is also this faculty of inquiry, you know, the ability to ask questions. So I just wanted to... I brought two books that I found personally very, very helpful. This one is called Krishna, Lord or Avatar, The Relationship Between Krishna and Vishnu, written by Freda Machet, a lady. And in the index, among so many other books, there's Prabhupada books. And she comes to the conclusion that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's intelligence. And then this one, Whom Gods Destroy, is written by Ruth Padell. And this is when I was doing my research on psychology. It was very helpful because she has nothing to do with India. But she's a Greek scholar at Princeton University. And she's explaining all psychological problems in terms of Greek theology, you know. And I found that very helpful, you know, when you bring it back to actual deities that affect us, influence us in different ways, because that's how Prabhupada explained it. That's what we're talking about. When we talk about Vasudeva, Sankarsana, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, we're talking about the deities that most, you know, that make the jiva what he is in this world, intellectually. And next we will learn about the mind and senses. So we didn't even get to that. So next class, we'll get into that. So thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.